Wine, as we know, in what is today Spain, has been produced for a very long time, ever since the day the Phoenicians reached its shores. Over the years, it has come to be pretty much made anywhere and everywhere in this country and the northeast of Spain, known more famously as the region of Catalonia, was no exception. In fact, its location made it perfect for this to occur. The first to introduce this practice to the region as a whole was probably the Greeks, since they settled there for many years, and then later the Romans came, and that further inspired production. Catalonia is probably most famous for its sparkling wine known as cava, but you might be interested to know that there are many other regions here coming up with some amazing wine. Now, today we are going to talk briefly about one region which has soared to the forefront as one of Spain's finest, best wine regions, and probably one of the world's best wine regions. And yet, just a few decades ago, it was virtually unknown to most people, even international experts. And it's just another example of that surprising wine revolution that took Spain by storm, especially during the 80s and 90s. We've seen this before, we've talked about it before, and we will see it and talk about it again in the future with more examples. You have a region with an old tradition in the practice, in the art of winemaking, but for many reasons, it's just not that well known, or the wine isn't that good, or it hasn't been marketed the right way, and then suddenly changes are made, it rises to stardom. And people think, wow, what is this all about? But it's basically the product of some very recent efforts to make quality wine. So we are talking about regions that have both ancient and modern characteristic personalities at the same time. And in this case, I am talking about DOCA Priorat. Priorat means priory in Catalan, the language spoken in those parts. A priory is a monastery, and there used to be a famous monastery there, which I will tell you more about in a second. But suffice it to say that during the Middle Ages, monasteries played an important part in the development of winemaking. The famous one I was telling you about, the one that gave Priorat its name, was a monastery founded by the Carthusian monks all the way back in 1194. The Carthusians were a monastic order founded by Saint Bruno in France. They, like many other orders, founded new settlements throughout Europe. In this case, they were often known as charter houses, but it was just another word for a monastery. And they cropped up in a number of different countries, including Spain. And there are still several that stand gloriously for the tourist to visit. And I would recommend you see them. They're often known in Spanish as cartujas. The one in Priorat no longer exists as an active monastery, but it was the first to be founded in Spain. Its name is Escaladei, and it means basically stairway to God. After a dream a shepherd had describing how angels rose to the heavens from the tip of a tall pine tree by way of this stairwell or this ladder, and that's where they get the name from. The monastery was built on the very spot where the dream supposedly took place, and the first wines are documented as appearing in 1263. Today, there is a Priorat wine and a pretty common one. You see it pretty often. It's called Escaladei or Scaladei, and that's where the name comes from. Like many places in Spain, winemaking carried on for many, many centuries, and until the 19th century when the monastery was abandoned and many of the lands previously owned by the church or the monastic orders passed to private hands. In 1844, five families joined together to start a bodega in the region. They produced the wine there for many decades and managed to make some pretty respectable wine, occasionally winning awards at European fairs. Then came the phylloxera plague, and it did its usual destruction. The bottom pretty much fell out, and basically no one bothered to put it back on. As a wine region, it continued to exist. but it suffered quite a bit, and most of its production was for local consumption. The region, as a maker of wine, hung on for dear life. To make matters worse, the Spanish Civil War in 1936 to 1939 left many parts of Spain unscathed, but unfortunately ravaged this area during the final decisive months. The worst battle of the war, the Battle of the Ebro River, actually took place in those parts and did a lot of damage. And then the dire post-war situation jeopardized the sector even more. As a result, many villagers headed to the cities like Barcelona in search of work, or they went to the coast where the textile industry offered more hope and more job opportunities. These were sad times for the locals, and there are records of people crying, leaving in tears as they left behind their vineyards. By the 1970s, there were just a few hectares of vines around. The situation for the region didn't just look dire, it seemed downright hopeless. However, there were signs of hope. Those convalescing vines on the terraces of the hills were actually potential gold mines. All it would take was a few daring winemakers with a little vision. Now, this would happen in the late 1980s, and there are many people involved here, but the name that often comes up above the rest as being the culprit, and I say that ironically, was a man named Alvaro Palacios, who belonged to a family of winemakers from Rioja, far away from the hills of Catalonia. The story goes that he, along with several other young and dynamic enologists, sort of pooled together their ideas, their knowledge, their dreams and their desires, as well as their small plots of vineyards, and they made some pretty amazing wine. It was marketed in very small quantities because there just wasn't much that could be made at the time. This was in the early 90s, and the rest is pretty much history. Now, that's simplifying it quite a bit, but that's the basic idea. Palacios then introduced his finest version called L'Ermita, the Hermitage, and it hit the shelves at a shocking price. Now, this was back in when we were using pesetas, so I can't quite recall, but I think it was something like 300 euros or 400 euros a bottle, which was something that was basically unheard of. Maybe you had the one untouchable wine, the Vega Sicilia, which was often considered to be the most expensive wine in Spain, but that like doubled it. And nowadays, the price of a bottle of L'Ermita can run above 1,000 euros and higher. But anyway, Priorat's fame and recognition continued to grow, as did its status as a wine region. If you recall, the standard category for Spanish wines and their regions is a DO, or Denominación de Origen. There is a higher level, the highest, in fact, for a region, and it's called Denominación de Origen Calificada. And there are only two in all of Spain with this distinction. One is not so surprising, it's Rioja, and the other is, you guessed it, Priorat. Now, what is it about this region that makes it so famous? Why are its wines so highly regarded? Well, Priorato is a tiny region in a hilly terrain, sort of in the inland of Catalonia. It's actually in the province of Tarragona, which is south of Barcelona and north of Valencia. The winters here are fairly dry and cold, and the summers are very hot. The soil isn't particularly rich, organically speaking. It's rocky and covered with a slate known as schist. These are factors that would contribute to slow-growing vines with generally low yields of grapes, but grapes that are very concentrated. There are also vines there that have been there for many, many years. These old vines, these old vine wines, which have become so popular. The slate, the schist soil, also contributes a mineral characteristic to the wine that is quite unique. The vines are generally single bush planting, lined up on steep hillsides or sometimes on these terraces. The harvest can't be done by machine, so it's all hand-picked. The land is generally not tilled or prepared by machine. They sometimes use animals like mules, so it's all quite laborious. The grape varieties are mainly Garnacha and Carignana, that's Grenache and Carignan. These are very common grapes in Spain, especially Garnacha, but they were traditionally sort of workhorse wine grapes. They were okay. You could make some pretty decent wines, but they tended to oxidate quite quickly. And it was often hard to make a classy, world-class wine. But here, because of their age, because of the climate, because of the small yield, because of the soil, you can come up with a quality and complexity from these grapes that you would rarely find in the world. And to add a little bit more complexity, some nuances, winemakers will sometimes add a bit of Syrah or Cabernet Sauvignon, but these are often, especially Grenache-based wines. And that makes them, that's one reason why they're so interesting and so different. The wines can also be made and sold without oak, but wood aging with high-quality French barrels is more and more common. These are labor-intensive wines, which are carefully produced from start to finish. So they are wines that are not only excellent in quality, in this case, they also have that X factor that says there's something about them that makes them hard to find anywhere else in the world. They can be singular, unique, and that is one of their, probably their biggest and boldest selling points. Now, in general, Priorats are pricey by Spanish standards. It's probably one of the most expensive regions, the most expensive region on average, I would say, in Spain at least. In Spain, you can get a decent bottle starting around 15 euros, and that's higher than most regions. And that will give you an idea of what we're talking about. For some of the more well-known choices, the ones that might really help you understand why they're so famous, you're starting at something closer to 25 to 30 euros and upwards, way upwards. For some listeners, that may sound reasonable, but remember, for Spain, that is very high end. If your budget allows for that, then you'll be able to enjoy more choices. But if not, and you are just looking for a special day wine, this is a go-to choice. As I said, they are pricey, but for the reasons I mentioned above, they are worth it. They are worth at least a once in your lifetime try. I think you won't be disappointed. You're in for something quite different. And that's for the red wines. Priorat does make some rosés and even some whites, which I've tried and found quite interesting. They are mainly made with white Grenache and Macabeo, which is also sometimes called Viura. They might blend it in with Muscatel or Chenin. They can be intriguing, but let's be honest here, the real star is the red wine. The Priorats tend to have a medium to dark color, but sometimes they can be lighter than you expect. The bouquet often reminds us of berries or cherries. And of course, if there's been oak aging there, that will be present. On the palate, they are full flavored and yet smooth, quite balanced, and you can often detect a sort of mineral-like characteristic to it. And one thing I find interesting about them is that these are wines that will continue to evolve and change as they continue to come into contact with the air. In other words, once you open that bottle, it's amazing how many different nuances, how many different characteristics, how many different impressions you can get in those first 30 minutes. It's amazing stuff. And I think we've covered this region pretty well. Priorat, one of the most interesting wine regions in Spain and in the world. And to think that 40 years ago, no one really gave two figs about its future. And that'll be all for this episode of Let's Open a Bottle, the podcast. brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please feel free to send us comments or questions because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, or Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Cheers, or salud as they say in Spain. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.